going to talk about demonology tonight. Back on that subject. I got to warm up to it. I meant to bring my little old sheepskin from Stanford University and put it on the screen. I'll do it tomorrow night. I mean, I've never felt like I needed to prove that I had a PhD from Stanford before. But on this subject, I think I do. And I forgot. I mean, I haven't carried that PhD diploma around. In fact, I don't remember ever taking it anywhere. Since I got it. Worked hard to get it. I was sick of it when I got it. I just hung it on the wall. I get amused. You just travel around. These people get their mail order degrees. The degree was big enough to cover a house. Stanford gives you a little old cheapy. A little, not that big. When I think of what Stanford University charges for tuition, they ought to give me one that I could pay for my wall with. But I'm just being stupid. But I felt like bringing it. I'm going to bring it tomorrow night. When I teach you on demonology, everybody's going to think I'm a nut. I can tell. I can just tell by looking at you there. Now, here's this book by Gerald Brittle. The Demonologist, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren. Now, why am I teaching on this? Well, it's Halloween. That's not the only reason. I'm in the business of proving that you can be intelligent and be a Christian. And in spite of what first impressions might be on this subject, you can't believe and found your faith on any acceptance of divine inspiration of the Old and New Testament without having to explain their references to demons. Jesus believed in them. Jesus encountered them. Now, I'm in the business of showing there's a lot of modern evidence that verifies the accuracy of Scripture. Not a wooden-headed approach. That's why I'm reading the Catholic. Now, in this book, The Catholic Demonologist, the demons seem to be scared of rosary beads and crucifix and holy water. I'm going to read you another one on the other extreme tonight in a Protestant camp where the crucifix and the holy water doesn't seem to get much done. And, you know, demons and belief in demons have been around for a long, long time. Just an awful long time. I'm boring you already. By the way, there's an architect's design. He took what Plato had to say about Atlantis. Been looking for that for months. I don't want it to leave my presence. It'll stay with me like my dogs. Till I have a chance to get back on Atlantis. This guy didn't even believe in Atlantis, but he took Plato's descriptions of Atlantis and did architect's drawings of what Atlantis would look like, the buildings, everything. I never saw anything like this. I mean, an architect took his drawings, and there's the Temple of Poseidon under construction. That's interesting. Sure glad I found that. Well, here's another demonology book I want to read tonight. You know, some people lament that television came along and people quit reading. You know, problem to me. I just read to you on television. Any of you know the great epic story of Beowulf? any real literature majors in here? I wish I could get America interested in our heritage. The great Scandinavian epic, Beowulf. It's to the Scandinavians what Homer is to the Greeks. I shall unlock my hoard of words at your will. I shall unfold before you, O King, the story of my wanderings, for truly I've roamed long years over this wonderful world. Turn the lights down. You guys just stay there a minute. The fire burned brightly in the castle hearth. On his high seat, the King of Anglia, well wrapped in furs, lounged carelessly while his earls took places below him, preparing to hear a renowned bard who was raising his harp and clearing his throat. Now, this is the way the history of those Celtic peoples that populated Northwest Europe was passed. Word of mouth. Because they didn't have a lot of writings that were recognizable, the Romans thought they couldn't write. Now we know they communicated with Ogham. Secret writings. Barry Fells finding them in the United States before Christ. But these bards, I mean, education is easy compared to what those storytellers went through to pass it on word of mouth. By the way, you know where we got our folklore? Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Jack and Jill went up the hill. Jack and the Beanstalk. Haven't you ever wondered what germ of truth and history is hidden in those so-called fairy tales? Grimm just collected them. Well, that's real. The fire burned brightly in the castle hearth. This is classic literature. There are people that have learned the original language in order to be able to read this. Only one copy of Beowulf in its original form has ever been found. It was discovered by Sir Robert Cotton in the 17th century. The fire burned brightly in the castle hearth. On his high seat, the King of Anglia, well wrapped in furs, lounged carelessly, while his earls took places below him, preparing to hear a renowned bard who was raising his harp and clearing his throat. Gusts of wind blew fragrant wind smoke out of the open doors or curled it about the heavy oak rafters. The night had fallen early, but the hall door stood wide open at either end of the rectangular room. No enemies would enter, for the land was at peace. The Angles had long before stopped their restless wanderings over the North Sea. They had cut Northumbria into marches and marches into shires. The once fierce Vikings had long since become peaceful farmers. Their leaders were called earls. Over them all ruled a fair king, noteworthy because he upheld the freedom of his people. Earls and carls, that's common people, alike. They didn't have movies in those days. They didn't have television. They had the bards, seeing strumming on his harp, getting ready to go. These Angles, lovers of poetry, had ages before skimmed over the North Sea, westward from Sweden and Denmark, until they founded their new kingdoms in Britain. None other than the Lost Tribes, by the way. I'll hypothecate that and show you the evidence. Oh, that's another subject. These Angles, lovers of poetry, had ages. You say, what's this got to do with demonology? Just hang on, I'll show you. I mean, I'm so fearful people are going to think I'm nuts. I want to show you how the great literature of the world incorporates such subjects. These Angles, lovers of poetry, had ages before skimmed over the North Sea, westward from Sweden and Denmark until they founded their new kingdoms in Britain, Mercia, Northumberland, and East Anglia. In the south of their new homeland, their brothers, the Saxon kings. You ever wondered where the word Saxon comes from? Nobody could figure it out until old Professor Rawlison dangled down on his scaffold and discovered the tripart writing. Too cold in here, Mike. The tripart writings. And when you need to come back to music, I'll tell you. The tripart writings on the Heaston Rock. They're Isaac's sons, Sakasuni. That's another subject. In the south of their new homeland, their brothers, the Saxon kings, ruled Sussex, Wessex, and Essex. The Roman legions, who for 400 years had kept order in Britain, were only a distant memory. Their missionaries had returned, however, to convince these settlers from over the seas to put away their worship of pagan gods, Freya and Woden and Thor and Jaster and the awesome beard goddess of death. Old King sang the bard, I have tramped the whole world over in the course of a lifetime. Every mighty king have I seen with these eyes. Every land have I understood, each with its own customs and habits, each with its own law. One truth have I learned above all others. A king who seeks to rule his people and his land without warfare must take this as his plan. He must work first and foremost for his people's good. Therefore, since the world began, this wandering star upon whose breast we live, one king has shone more brightly than all the others. He was Alexander of Macedon. In the far-flung realms of Rome have I wandered, as a guest made welcome for his songs. In imperial Rome have I seen great Caesar ruling in all pomp and majesty. Through the lands of Greece have I also roamed, and farther eastward even than that. I've seen the splendor of Persian kings. I've glimpsed the sands of Africa and watched the foreign folk who dwell in Egypt's land. I've looked eagerly upon the wealthy men of the East and gaped at their trading vessels proudly riding the waves of Italy's harbors. Boy, he got around. Men have I seen who dwell by the Ganges waters, whose flood waves ride down into an unknown sea near Jaster's for home. Lombardy have I seen also in Franconia. In the halls of great kings, the mead has always flowed freely. That's strong drink, my friends. Their gold armlets were the reward of my songs. I've sung before the chiefs of the Angles here in Britain and before the Jutes in the Isle of Wight. And in the coal lands and the northernmost Picts and Scots, I've sung before the Saxons and the Swedes and the Danes and the wayward fared to where the Elbe River joins our northern sea. You know, they got around, even in that ancient day. I have willingly sought the hordes of fierce Huns over whom Attila holds sway and stopped on my way home at the mead halls of the Franks across the sea. Pirates of the northern coasts have I recalled in my songs and fought my way into the eastern land of the Finns. 600 shillings of pure gold has been my fee, and acres of land is a gift from the Queen of Mercia. Born was I in the Anglian land of Britain, and there shall I die, a faithful son of song. One truth would I set high above all others, repeated the gleeman, only the king who loves his people is beloved in turn of them. That king alone shall never be forgotten. Bards, even now unborn, shall sing of his feats, his strength, his faithfulness, and his open-handedness. Let the bards be ever entrusted to write the songs of a hero, and his people will have them to sing always. The last sound of the harp drifted across the hall. The singer was done. Slowly. That was was the entertainment for the night. Slowly, the king roused himself. Pulling one of the massive gold armlets from his own arm, he sent it to the bard. The world was indeed very wide, and he, for one, had too much to do at home in Anglia ever to fare so far. What was the life of a man? What indeed was the life of a king unless he worked hard for his people who had raised him to the throne? What more than the flight of a gull through the meat hall, a sudden, bright sweep of white wings against the smoke-blackened rafters? Only the unselfish. Only the great in heart were worthy of being sung by the bards. Sing us the song of the Angles, ordered the king. Tell us again our own story, that we may steep ourselves in kingship. Sing. Sing, O bard of the hero. Like a distant forward to the swelling song, the heavy rumble of waves driven by the evening tide moaned and tore at the shore across the beach outside. They were the same waters that washed the headlands of Denmark, the olden home of the Angles. The great hall was still. The song they would hear was such an old one, sung down the ages, recalling a time so long ago that only the great in heart had been remembered from it. Gently, the gleeman stroked his harp in long, lonesome chords like the mournful sound of a wild wind shrieking through darkness. Shivers pierced the bones of the listeners as the old, homely words rang again in their ears. Sing of the Danes and the days gone by, deeds of our kings who were scatheless in war. Tell about Skild, the son of Skef, how he rode, or rather how he stole the mead from the foemen's halls, how he ripped their thrones from under their feet, how he drove his prow through the ways of the whale, how he gulped down tribute from all the tribes that clung to their cliffs for the chilly sea. Shout about Skild, with his strength and his might, building wide mead halls ribbed with gold. That was an earl, that Skild, son of Seth. Ah, what a king we had in the distant days of the Danes. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
The great king called Skild ruled for many years over the seafaring peoples of the north. And God gave him a fair, strong son to rule after him. According to the old king's will, his body was borne down the sea cliffs and placed on the earlman's ship. Bronze shields bright with gold flashed along her gunwales, and from her masthead flew the shining flag of Skild. The dead king, dressed in full mail, wearing his gem-studded crown, was laid on the open deck. On his chest lay heaped the wealth he had gathered during his long rule over the sea realms. Battle axes and swords lay flashing in the winter sunlight about his body. Sadly, the earls pushed the shining ship away from the jetty and watched the first deep swells of the sea catch her and sweep her along over the deep. To this day, no man can say what became of King Skild or his seaworthy ship. The waves hold him in trust, the wild western sea. The Skilding kings, descended from Skild, reigned in Denmark for countless ages until the people became a whole, one in heart and mind. Then ruled an unselfish king named Hrothgar, who dreamed of a deed that would awe the bards so deeply that his name would be recalled among the Vikings forevermore. Hrothgar unfolded his plan. He would have built in Denmark a great hall, so lofty, so heavy with gold, so braced with iron bands, that it's like the northern folks had never thought to witness. So what's the gem? What's the source? What's the history? The original story, now embellished in much telling. Now, let's see. Hrothgar unfolded his plan. He would have built in Denmark a great hall, so lofty, so heavy with gold, so braced with iron bands, that it's like the northern folks had never thought to witness. There on a lofty seat, Hrothgar would sit in state night after night, giving rings to his earls, granting wealth to young and old alike, sharing even before his death all the gold of Denmark. Denmark's where they found that bog man, isn't it? They found another one over in England now, you know. It was in the news just last week. In this way, and to this end, was built Heorot Hall, the house of the deer, a wonder so famous that gleemen from all over the sea-swept lands came to gasp at its rows of stag's antlers, its bronze-bound doors, its lofty ceilings, and the lavishness of King Hrothgar. If he could, he'd build a glass cathedral. Or a towering skyscraper. Monuments. There every evening sat the Danish Earl with his queen, Vilfjal. What a name. Vilfjal. How do you whisper sweet nothings in the pillow at night to Vilfjal? Vilfjal. The handsome two, givers of gifts, from the lands around the earls came to swear, fealty to Hrothgar. Night after night, however, the fiends of evil. See? I mean, I don't want you to think I'm nuts because I talk about demons. I mean, this is the greatest literary masterpiece of the Scandinavian peoples. Night after night, however, the fiends of evil, those who live in the underworld, writhed and curled with hatred as the sweet sound of the harp rose from the hearthside. Jealous and full of anger, they leered as the soft song of the scope, another name for bard, praised the all-powerful God. He who had fashioned the earth with its level fields and shimmering pools with its girdle of sparkling green sea, he it was who had thrust the sun and moon up into the blue skies where they could stand as torches as beacons for all homecomers over the seas. He it was who had bespangled the soils with russet leaves and reeds, and who had breathed the breath of life into beings. The fiends writhed and curled with hatred as the bards sang and praised this creator of it all. Hrothgar and his eldermen lived happily in Heorot Hall until the day that Grendel, a living fiend out of hell, as Satan who ruled over the swamps and marches, came stalking toward them. And I'm reading from an ancient classic. The copy I happen to be reading is from a little booklet, The Medieval Myths. I got lots of little books because I used to travel a lot. I had to, everything I could get in a paperback, I did. Beowulf is what I'm reading. The classic heroic epic for the Scandinavian people. Some of you have seen, how many have ever seen the movie El Cid? What El Cid was to the Spanish, Beowulf to the Scandinavians. It's like Homer's vast epics for the Greeks. I'm going to read you something out of the Bible first. You see, I forgot to bring my degree from Stanford. The only time I've ever felt a need to hide behind it, made insecure with what I'm teaching. I'm teaching on demonology. And I'm afraid that my credibility is going to be destroyed because this stuff's so unbelievable. You're going to think I'm a nut or something. Read Genesis chapter 5. Remember when Cain killed Abel? God got on to Cain. And Cain said in the 13th verse, Cain said unto the Lord, my punishment's greater than I can bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid. And I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that everyone that findeth me shall slay me. Who? Adam and Eve and Abel? Abel's dead. Who's everyone? Did you ever ask those kind of questions? I mean, there was Adam, and then there was Eve. And then there was Cain, and then there was Abel. And Abel's dead. And Cain's worrying about being driven away. So far away from Adam and Eve. But he says, everyone that findeth me shall slay me. Who's everyone? Did it ever bug you? Well, I know there were some bureaucrats missing links. That's who it had to be. And the Lord said unto him, therefore, whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. Oh, I know what the apocryphal books say. But I'm reading Beowulf. I just want you to see that there might be connections. Where did this story come from? The bard is singing about the great Scylding king, Hrothgar, who built Heorot Hall, the house of the deer, a wonder so famous that gleemen from all over the sea-swept lands came to gasp at its rows of stag's antlers, its bronze-bound doors, its lofty ceiling, and the lavishness of King Hrothgar. Turn some more lights out. There every evening sat the Danish earl with his queen, Vilthia. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but neither does anybody else. Queen Vivthiaw beside him, the handsome two, givers of gifts. From the lands around, earls came to swear fealty to Hrothgar. Night after night, however, why at night? Night after night, however, the fiends of evil, those who live in the underworld, writhed and curled with hatred as the sweet sound of the harp rose from the hearthside to Colmite. Jealous and full of anger, they leered as the soft song of the scope, another name for bard, praised the all-powerful, another name for God. He who had fashioned the earth with its level fields and shimmering pools, with its girdle of sparkling green sea. He it was who had thrust the sun and moon up into the blue skies where they could stand as torches, as beacons for all homecomers over the seas. He it was who had bespangled the soil with russet leaves and reeds and who had breathed the breath of life into beings. Hrothgar and his eldermen lived happily in Harold Hall until the day that Grindel, a living fiend out of hell, a Satan, who ruled over the swamps and marshes, came stalking toward them. Grindel and his folk had been banished to the fens eras before because of their slaying of Cain. Why is it you can't escape the Bible in all areas you turn? You can't be intelligent and not understand the Bible. You can be a sinner if you want to. I ain't trying to save anybody. You can't be intelligent and understand the Bible. I'm like Paul. I don't force it on anybody. He wrote the Corinthians. Said I wouldn't have you ignorant. Wrote three chapters about spiritual gifts and then ended up saying, if you want to be stupid, go ahead. Where did Cain come into this? And Satan. Grindel and his folks had been banished to the fens eras before because of their slaying of Cain. Now, what's the germ of truth in this story? By the way, this is great literature. College professors teach this. Nobody thinks they're nuts. As they report on the great epic of the Danish kings, Satan. Grendel and his folks have been banished to the Fens eras before because of their slaying of Cain. Isn't it interesting that some evil befalling them, which the book of Genesis says they'll be punished 7 times if they slay Cain. Now, whether this is what got Grendel in his shape or not is doubtful. But this intermingling of threads that must be unraveled through the myths back to the kernel of truth is what fascinates me. To Grendel's accursed folk belong the ghouls, the dragons, the lemurs, the elves, and all evil curs. The giants also had been outlawed along with Satan because they had fought against God. Doesn't the Bible talk about these giants before the flood? Therefore, God was giving them a fitting reward through everlasting ages. Remember the Apocryphal Book of Enoch? When Enoch prayed for the watchers, God told him what to go tell them. So in the dark night, gliding along the shadows, Grendel crept stealthily toward Herald, drooling with spit, stinking and hairy. He leaped the outside. You know, Gerald Brittle, the demonologist, has a tape recording of a conversation in which a demon identifies himself. I figure if Beowulf can do it, and I can read that and not be thought I'm nuts, let me try this for size. See if I can find it. I think I can find it. Just be patient. I've lost things before and found them. That's not it. I know I got it here somewhere. There's a whole setting. I know I got it. Wait a minute. Maybe it's the other way. Yeah, here it is. The Demonologist of Gerald Brittle. When asked to provide an example of the last point, Ed's talking about demonologists in a particular place. Ed goes into his office and returns with a reel-to-reel tape. Now, this is the guy that was in his office where the black mass appeared. Remember that? This is the guy that went to help the Donovans out. Remember that? This is the guy that was called to West Point by the commandant in 1970s, no less, to deal with the reports of a ghost at West Point. This is the expert calling in on the Amityville horror case. Okay. When asked to provide an example, Ed goes into his office and returns with a reel-to-reel tape. This came from a session in 1972, he says, threading the tape through the recorder. At the time, we were trying to determine who or what had been oppressing and sometimes possessing a woman named Mary since she was 8 years old. When the recording was made, Mary was in her mid-50s. Also present on that day were Lorraine, myself, a Catholic priest, and a deep trance medium. Just before this segment, the spirit had been speaking through the medium, lying, switching into foreign languages to keep us from understanding it, and talking in a falsetto voice, claiming to be an angel. To get to the truth, we placed a crucifix on the table behind the medium, who was in a trance, her eyes tightly closed. We then commanded the spirit to speak, at which point something very different came through. Ed switched on the tape recorder. Voice, I do not choose to be here. Ed warned. Why'd you come then? Voice, I'm under the power. Ed, whose power? Voice. You want me to quit? A white light. Ed, describe yourself to me. Voice. No. The crucifix is then set in place, followed by... I can't read any of this. Don't believe it. You don't want me to, do you? Describe yourself to me. No. The crucifix is then set in place, followed by agonized screaming by the possessing spirit on the tape. Ed, describe yourself to me. Voice, I must in truth tell you what I look like. I am wicked and ugly looking. I am inhuman. I am vindictive. I have a horrible face. I have much gross hair on my body. My eyes are deep sunk. I'm burnt. I grow hair. My nails are long. My toes are clawed. What else you want to know? Ed, what do you call yourself? I am Rasisilabus. I am Rasisilabus. I don't want to hear more of that. Go back to real literature. Real literature. Grendel crept stealthily toward Harold, drooling with spit, stinking and hairy. He leaped the outside walls and stopped to listen. I want to tell you, you can answer the phone at King's House 1, not here. But them Los Angeles people better call me when I tell them to call me. I'll sit Grendel on. Drooling with spit, stinking and hairy, he leaped the outside walls and stopped to listen. No one had heard him. Only the leaves rustled overhead. Then with a blood-curdling scream, he rushed headlong into the hall where the Danish warriors were sleeping. Careless and carefree, they slumbered on the benches, heedless of woe, until Grendel's scream tore them from their sleep. Before they could think, he had crashed through their midst, his claws sunk deep in two warriors. Hurriedly, he snatched up others, one or two at a time, until he had slaughtered 30 of Hrothgar's doughtiest earls. After the whole company had awakened, he lurched from the hall and took flight, leaving the partially eaten bodies strewn and mangled among the rushes of the floor. The deaths were not discovered till dawn. King Hrothgar was appalled. He gathered at once that his strength or that of his earls together could do nothing against the evildoer. The struggle was too uneven. Within a few days, Grendel crept back, and again the king awoke to find his fair hall in shambles, the boards all overturned and his warriors torn by the monster's claws spread about the floor. Whoever had escaped the ogre's greediness fled for his life across the land of Denmark. In time, the great hall was empty. No suppers were held. No scopes or gleeman, bards that is, came to Heorot anymore. Nor was there any more giving of rings. For 12 long years, Grendel haunted the realm of Hrothgar. No treaty, no peace, no ransom, no fee. Nothing could allay the wrath of Grendel against the kingdom of Denmark. Night after night, the accursed shadow of death crept through the woods, prowled about chieftains' dwellings, snatched his prey at random without thought for rank, youth, or years. stealthily. He lay in wait, caught men in his traps, flung them headlong into an endless darkness. Men looked for him, straining their eyes fearfully to peer through the rolling fog of the moors, dreaded the thump of his heavy paw on their shoulders as they hauled in their nets. They scanned the beaches for him at twilight. They saw him behind every bush and stone of the path, or stood stock still listening for the crunch of his bare pads on the pebbles. I'm boring you. So many bloody deaths. So many screeching loved ones. Boy, literature's tame. TV didn't discover violence. So many bloody deaths. So many screeching loved ones. How could a man know where the fiend would turn up next? And what does a man know anyway of the fiends that crawl through the black night? In the dark of the evening, Grendel lumbered into the empty hall hunting for food. One thing alone he could not touch. This is kind of interesting. One thing alone he could not touch. Very interesting. One thing alone he could not touch. Very, very interesting. One thing alone he could not touch. This wicked lover crept. One thing alone he could not touch. I'm boring you. One thing alone he could not touch. When the telephone rings at the Warren's house, I'm back to the demonologist, Gerald Brittle. When the telephone rings at the Warren's house, I mean, if great literature can have things like, I can read this, you won't think I'm crazy. When the telephone rings at the Warren's house and a somber-toned clergyman on the other end of the line asks for Ed Warren, there's a better than even chance that something serious has happened. Such was the case with Annabelle. The referral this time came from an Episcopal priest calling from the church's administrative offices in Connecticut. I'm telling you, a lot of these things up there in our territory, they like cold, I guess. And they're trying to freeze themselves so they'll last longer the first entrance into the hot place, I guess. The referral this time came from an Episcopal priest calling from the church's administrative offices in Connecticut. The clergyman was relaying a message. Now, my Ghostbusters are going to have to find this town, too. Check this one out. Relaying a message he'd received from a minister elsewhere in the state. Though the information the priest had was sketchy. We aren't leaving by the 11:30 hour.
This is the end of side one. For more of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side two. Thank you.